Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining me. I'm Ed D'Agostino. I'm the publisher at Malden Economics. It's great to have you with us for this subscriber call for subscribers of Street Freak. And I just want to give a special welcome to several hundred new subscribers who just joined us in the last few days. Welcome. I appreciate your support of everything that we do at Malden Economics and of Jared Dillian's research. So, this entire discussion that we're going to have today with Jared is based on questions that you've sent in, subscribers have sent in. I've taken all of your questions so far, compiled them into what I hope will be an informative narrative and back and forth discussion with Jared for you. Also, there is an opportunity for you to ask questions via the Slido app on this page. So again, welcome, and let's jump right into it. Let's bring Jared on. Jared, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Good, ready to talk. Although I'm not sure you could call what I do research. I don't know if it's research.
I would call it research. In this industry, compared to what everyone else is doing, yes, you are solidly research. You have the resume to prove it. It's funny, we do have a lot of new subscribers, so it might be worth taking just a couple of minutes just to sort of give yourself a quick introduction, if you don't mind. I know I'm putting you on the spot, and you might get a little embarrassed by that, but I think it's worth doing just so everyone kind of knows who they've signed up with.
Okay. I graduated from the Coast Guard Academy. I had a career in the Coast Guard. At age 27, I got out. I got my MBA. Worked at Lehman Brothers for 7 years. I did index arbitrage, and I ran the ETF desk for a number of years. Did a lot of prop trading. While I was there, that's when I started writing. I was writing market commentary to our clients, and that turned into my first newsletter, the Daily Dirt Nap, which I started in 2008. I've been running the Daily Dirt Nap since for 13 years now, and that's kind of what I do every day. I joined Malden Economics in 2014, started the Street Freak newsletter. I've been writing the 10th Man for 7 years, which is pretty incredible. I also write op-eds for Bloomberg on a bunch of different stuff. I've taught at the graduate and undergraduate level. What else? I also am a musician. I'm a DJ, and I'm currently getting an MFA in creative writing.
Perfect. Thank you for taking that time to do that. Now let's jump right into the topic of the day, which is inflation, right? I think, Jared, if we could start at the beginning here, let's talk about the timeline of this investment theme, because this is not a trade in the true sense of the word. Can you give us kind of a rundown of why that is, why you think this is actually going to be a long-term trend that we're going to be investing in and around?
Well, we basically had a disinflationary trend for 40 years, and everybody was kind of wondering that when that would end. Inflation was coming down, interest rates were coming down. And the turning point on that was the pandemic. That's when everything changed. It became clear to me at the time, the Fed was flooding the system with liquidity. We were handing out stimulus checks. And it was clear to me that the psychology around inflation had reversed. And this is a subject that people don't really talk about a lot. But I really believe that inflation is a psychological phenomenon. It's not an economics phenomenon. And that's why so many people have a difficult time with it. For decades, we had a disinflationary psychology. And what that meant was you could delay purchases because the price was not going up. In fact, in a lot of cases, the price was going down of whatever you were going to buy, whether it was TVs or something else. So if you said, well, I feel like getting a TV, but there's no hurry because the price isn't going up and it's probably going to go down, so I can get one next year instead of this year. And the psychology around that has totally changed. And now people are accelerating purchases of all different kinds of goods, particularly stuff you get at the grocery store. They're buying now rather than later because the price is going to be higher in a couple of months. They're hoarding things. That started during the pandemic. It started with the toilet paper, but people were making massive trips to the grocery store and hoarding goods. So that inflationary psychology has continued to today. And what's exacerbated it is the government's interventions in the labor markets, where we've given enhanced unemployment benefits, and we've sort of created this artificial labor shortage. And now wages are going up, and wages are sticky, and they don't go back down. So the psychology of inflation has changed, and it's going to take years and a lot of effort out of the Fed to try to reverse it. And there's no effort to reverse it at this point. CPI is 5%, and everybody seems to be okay with that. So and even if the Fed wasn't okay with it, they move so slowly. We're talking about tapering asset purchases maybe 6 to 12 months out, hiking rates in 2022 or 2023. They're so slow moving, they're powerless to stop it. So, this investment theme is going to continue for years into the future.
I think a lot of people, it's a hard concept to get your head around, because I think a lot of people expected that coming out of the pandemic, things would just go back to the way they were. And I think that was a valid assumption. The other reason that I know you've touched on in the past, and others at the Strategic Investment Conference have also touched on this, people like Louis Gav, they're has been underinvestment in critical sectors of the economy for years that seem to all be coming together at the same time to have a big impact. I'm talking about things like underinvestment in chips, wafers. That doesn't fix itself right away. Underinvestment in the oil patch, underinvestment in housing. Why is it that all of those factors are also sort of coming to light seemingly all at once?
Yeah, I mean, a healthy economy is not plagued by shortages and dysfunction. And, our economy is plagued by shortages and dysfunction of all different kinds of things. You hit on the semiconductors issue, which I actually don't know a lot about. The underinvestment in housing, I think, was sort of an overreaction to the overinvestment in housing that we had in the 2000s. So I think that's just the pendulum swinging the other way. But there's two sides to this. I mean, you talked about the supply side, which is the shortages of all these things. And you combine that with what's going on with the demand side. There's the wealth effect. Stock market has gone up, so people feel like they have a lot of cash. They're spending more. There's what the government's done with stimulus checks. So everybody has lots of money. It's funny, I was out to my favorite restaurant last night in my town. We talked to them, and they said that back in April, this is Myrtle Beach, Pawleys Island, this is a vacation town, so it's very seasonal. You typically have 3 months of good business in the summer, and then it's quiet the rest of the year. But they were saying they were having their best days in April. We went there on a Tuesday night. It was packed. We couldn't get in. Tuesday night. So, it's not just the supply side, it's also the demand side.
So, can you give us an idea of what this trade looks like over time? Because it feels like there's still a lot of push-pull in the market between value and growth. And there are days when it gets a little discouraging. So what do you see playing out over the next several quarters for the inflation trade?
Yeah, I may sound like I have a lot of confidence in this trade. I mean, there are days when I don't have a lot of confidence. The last 3 weeks have been tough on the inflation trade. Value should outperform growth for the next several years. The average duration of value outperformance is 64 months. We're in month 7, so this should continue for a while. But kind of what's driving the market today is the bond market. And I think the bond market is dominated by flows from Asia. And so we've had interest rates come down about 30 basis points, and that's brought the growth trade back. So all the tech stocks are back up. So I just try to take a longer view about this. And, you know, I just think it's going to outperform in the future.
How would you say today's environment is different than the 1970s? Because that's one of the big concerns we got from readers is, you know, how really can we invest in inflation outside of, say, oil when velocity of money is so low? Can you compare the two?
Well, first of all, people, I think, pay too much attention to velocity. You know, if you look at Milton Friedman's quantity of money theory, MV equals PQ, you know, velocity isn't really defined. We don't know what velocity is, but we know what M is, and we know what P is, and we know what Q is. And we just sort of solve for V, and that's velocity. And people kind of have this loose definition. It's how fast a dollar moves through the economy, but it doesn't really mean anything. And what we've seen in the last couple of months is that you can have inflation without an increase in money velocity. So I just don't pay a lot of attention to that. I can't remember what was the other question you asked me.
Just comparing today's environment to the 1970s.
Oh, the 70s. Yeah. So that was a different kind of inflation. You know, the 1970s were very bad for the stock market, I think for reasons that were separate from inflation. And that was a stagflationary environment. And people still talk about that this day. They still throw that term around. And they say, we're going to have stagflation. You know, that period in the 1970s was very unusual as far as inflationary periods. If you look at other countries at various points in history, usually when you get inflation, you don't have a weak economy, you have a strong economy, especially when it's this type of monetary-driven inflation. So I don't think that's the playbook for what's going to happen this time. You know, it's not going to be like 1982 when the PE of the stock market was 8. We're going to have high valuations. And I do think the stock market continues to go up.
Would you say that it continues to go up even if the Fed starts to tighten or raises interest rates?
You know, I've spent most of my career watching the Fed pretty closely. And, you know, when I started out on the index arbitrage desk, it's actually a money market trade. So we were paying a lot of attention to short-term interest rates. So that's where I really learned to watch the Fed. And the last Fed meeting where they moved forward rate hike expectations, that was a little bit of a shock to the stock market. You know, it declined about 2 or 3%. But if you were paying attention to the Fed speakers, you would have seen that coming. The part that I did not predict was the magnitude of the reaction. I thought that was already priced into the market. So basically how this is going to work is the Fed's going to get progressively more hawkish. And at some point, you're going to have this psychological realization where we just kind of wake up and say, oh my God, they're going to hike rates. And things are going to get very choppy very quickly. So I'm looking out 6 to 12 months. It's hard to plan for that. I don't know when that's going to happen, but at some point it will happen.
Okay. We've got some questions coming in from the audience, and I want to get to some of them. The first one, and this is one that was also sent in to us, has to do with gold, which, you know, I think gold is sort of everyone's reflexive inflation investment. And it's been frustrating to be a gold holder. I just had a conversation last week with John Malden. We were in New York together for lunch for the first time in well over a year. It was great to have an in-person meeting. But he made a comment. I don't know if you agree or not, but he said that he feels like gold is very soon going to start acting like gold again. What are your thoughts on gold? How much do you feel people should hold? Should they be in that awesome portfolio range of 20%? Anything change for you in this environment?
Well, I will tell you, it doesn't feel very good right now. It feels like crap. And I've always said that I'm not going to sell gold until we take actions to balance the budget. I mean, out of all the macroeconomic factors, the one that gold has the most correlation with is the budget deficit. So until we start doing some kind of austerity or even thinking about doing some austerity, then I think it's a good idea to hold on to gold. In the short term, it's very painful. The trade isn't working. What, you know, I have recommended a 20% allocation as part of the Awesome portfolio. What would have worked better was a 20% allocation to a basket of commodities. That would have worked great. So what influenced my thinking on that was, you know, over the last 20 years, a basket of commodities has underperformed gold. So it's, I don't really have an answer here. It's very tough. I mean, I would like for gold to start acting like gold again. It trades very technically. A good time to buy it is when everybody is suicidal about it. We're not quite there yet. So that's my thoughts on it.
Okay. How about, you know what, let me get back to one of the questions that was sent in to us, because this is, I think, an important question. Do you see inflation being global in nature, or do you see this being primarily a U.S. Phenomenon?
It's global. It's for sure it's global. But the U.S. is the primary driver of it, because we export our monetary policy to a lot of other places in the world. A lot of countries have been dollarized. They use U.S. dollars. And foreign central banks typically harmonize their monetary policy with the Fed. So we export our monetary policy everywhere. And so it's going to be a global inflation. I think it'll probably be worse here than other places, but it's going to be everywhere.
We've got some asset allocation questions coming in. Let me take this one comes from Mark. Any thoughts about REITs in general? He says, I realize that there are some better than others, but as a retired dividend seeker, they seem attractive to me. Are you concerned about interest rate risk?
I'm not super concerned about interest rate. I think REITs are great. At this point in the cycle, I think REITs are fantastic. And I think that, you know, if you go back 5, 10, 15 years ago, it was a bit like owning a bond, and it was very sensitive to interest rates. Now I think REITs are responding to different factors. I think it's very sensitive to inflation and property prices. The dividends are great, better than what you're getting in bonds. So, you know, as part of the Awesome portfolio, you have a 20% allocation to REITs, and I think that's terrific.
So you mentioned the Awesome portfolio, 20% allocations. One of the other categories in that portfolio is cash, right? So in an inflationary environment, cash decreases in value. Does this inflationary environment change your feelings about how much cash to hold, or do you still maintain that you should have it because it's an opportunity to buy something in the future?
Yeah, I think people are unnecessarily concerned about the impact of inflation on cash. Okay, I mean, it would be one thing if inflation was 14%, but it's not. The reason that you hold cash for reasons that really have nothing to do with inflation. It's an opportunity to buy an asset at a lower price in the future. And also, there's nothing worse than being fully invested in the stock market when it's at the highs. And you don't have any ammo to take advantage of lower prices when the stock market drops. So unless inflation starts to get really bad, we start getting close to double digits, I'm not changing my view on holding 20% cash.
Okay. Another question from the audience, and this I'm going to take this, but then give it a little twist. So the question is, what do you think about hotels and travel-related equities, which ties in with some other questions that we received, talking about kind of how is your positioning in Street Freak different than the reopening trade, where airlines and travel stocks kind of ran up, and then as soon as we found out about a vaccine, so and that's feeling a little played out now. So are you still a fan of travel-related stocks in general?
Yeah, I think the trade is mostly played out. I mean, we exited some of those trades in Street Freight, the airlines and so forth. I still personally hold one of those reopening trades. It's not doing too well. I'm hoping for a second wave after the summer. I do think that this summer's travel, whether it's hotels or theme parks or airlines, I think it will exceed people's expectations. But I think it's mostly priced in, and it's time to move on to other ideas.
Okay. So it's impossible as an interviewer to get through an interview without asking about cryptocurrency. So let me address that one head on. We've got a question here. Do you have any updated thoughts on Bitcoin? You made a great call to sell GBTC. That's the ticker for the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, which you had in the Street Freak portfolio, sold it for a very large gain. So he's saying, any thoughts since that sale? Bitcoin's been beaten down a lot. Is it time to get back in? What do you think?
No, it's not time to get back in. I think, you know, if you look at Bitcoin trades very technically, and if you look at a chart of Bitcoin, it's the most symmetrical. It's so symmetrical, it's artistic. It's a big head and shoulders top. And after the head and shoulders, you have knees and toes. I think it's going to get down to 10,000, and I think it's going to stay there for a while. And I don't see any immediate opportunities to get back in. I mean, if you want to talk about the fundamentals of it, it's going to be a lot of regulation coming. You have Michael Saylor with MicroStrategy, who's bought 0.5% of all the Bitcoin outstanding. His average price is 26,000. That's going to get tested. So it's a bit of a horror show right now. I don't want anything to do with it.
I do love.
I do want to mention. So we had GBTC in the portfolio, and that was actually it was a good sale because we sold a high price in Bitcoin. But also when we sold it, GBTC was trading at a 20% premium, and now it's trading at a 20% discount. So we took advantage of the premium. So it was an amazing trade.
Okay. This is a good question that just came in from a subscriber, perhaps a new Street Freak subscriber. So she said, for those of us who don't know what the Awesome Portfolio is, how does it function within Street Freak? So kind of two questions first. Maybe could you just recap what the Awesome Portfolio is?
So the Awesome Portfolio is 20% stocks, bonds, cash, gold, and real estate, fixed percentages, and you rebalance it once a year. And that portfolio has produced returns of 8.4% over 49 years with a max drawdown of 9.2%. It's the perfect asset allocation. Street Freak doesn't have anything to do with the Awesome Portfolio. Street Freak is an active, aggressive trading service. There's a lot of risk involved. We try to earn returns above that 8.4%. We may not succeed. We may underperform. That's the risk you take with Street Freak, but that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I've heard John explain it well. He uses the term core and explore. So, I mean, the way I look at it, for me personally at least, is the Awesome Portfolio is sort of how you would structure your core portfolio. And then Street Freak and some of our other services that are more speculative are just that. That's where you're going to employ more speculative dollars that are outside of your core portfolio. Would you agree with that general description?
No, 100%. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Let me find a couple of other questions here because there's a bunch. In your inflation scenario, how would the rate curve look? Do you consider the possibility of another? Oh, and also, do you consider the possibility of another COVID wave? So yield curve probably first. In an inflationary scenario, what do you see happening with the yield curve? So the relationship
between
short-term rates and long-term rates.
Yeah, the yield curve's tough. You know, it's been bull flattening over the past month. In an inflationary environment, it should be bear steepening. The yield curve right now, you know, front-end rates are coming up a little bit because of Fed hike expectations. Back-end rates are coming down. You know, the inflation trade is very correlated to the Treasury market and the shape of the yield curve. And it's almost like it's so correlated, it's almost like a pure bet on a bear steepening of the yield curve. So that makes me uncomfortable, you know, and it almost makes me wonder if I should buy bonds as a hedge. Now, talking about like COVID variants and, you know, resurgence of COVID and stuff like that, I'm not really concerned about a resurgence in COVID. I'm concerned about a resurgence in the fear of COVID. Two different things. You know, we could have some variant that increases the infection rate and you have thousands of infections and whatever. But as long as people don't care, it doesn't matter. And right now, it seems like people don't care.
Okay. Here's a question from a reader about the VIX. Should we be concerned about the VIX grinding lower? Do you read anything from this? I would ask even a more simple question. Should we care about the VIX at all?
Yeah, I mean, VIX is, last time I checked, it was about 16, which is low. I mean, realized volatility is very low right now. I mean, stock market's realizing 20, 30 basis points a day. It's very quiet. It's very boring. So, but the, you know, it's important to point out that this equilibrium that we have now in volatility is higher than it was before. And that's a reflection of the fact that we're in an inflationary environment. In an inflationary environment, you're going to have higher volatility. So if 16 to 20 is the equilibrium in VIX now, 2 years ago, it was 10 to 12. So it's a different environment.
Okay. Here's an interesting question from a reader. For dividend paying stocks, do you typically take the dividend in cash or do you automatically invest it or does it depend?
I personally get cash dividends, but I think for most people, they should reinvest. So do as I say, not as I do. Reinvesting dividends is great. And, you know, one of the things I say on my radio show is that the key to investing success is to buy stocks that have dividends that are growing and invest the dividends. That's the key to success. Reinvest the dividends. So I just don't do that because I use the cash to buy other stuff. So,
okay. I think we have time for two more questions here. So let me be choosy. This one was sent in to us by Don, a subscriber. It says, GavCal recently posted an article about the Walmart Inflation Index. It said that it included only food, housing, and energy. So those are the big three CPIs for the American consumer. And then he notes, I would add the Boomer Index, which includes medical, food, housing, and energy. But anyway, he states that GavCal says that a high Walmart Inflation Index has preceded nearly every single recession. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't have any thoughts on that particular observation. I will say that out of this Walmart Inflation Index, you know, two of these things are the things that we exclude. I mean, we exclude food and we exclude energy. It doesn't make any sense. Housing is a big component of CPI. And I think that CPI is going to be driven by housing prices going forward. It's calculated. It's something called owner's equivalent rent. That's the biggest component of CPI. And as housing prices go up, it's going to cause CPI to go up. So that's something to watch out for.
Okay. I've got a bunch more questions coming in now, so I'm going to go to extend a little bit, if you don't mind. What will happen to mortgage REITs if the Fed stops buying mortgage-backed securities? It's kind of an inside baseball.
I guess it's nothing. Look, here's the thing. The Fed isn't going to stop buying MBS. They'll taper. It's my personal belief that the Fed will start tapering and they won't finish tapering. They'll go from $120 billion a month to $90 billion a month to $60 billion a month, and then the stock market's going to gag and they'll stop. So I don't even think we'll get there.
Sorry, I'm just looking at a couple of questions here.
Yeah.
Thinking of hedging the market right now, short S&P 500. Your thoughts on an ETF as a hedge or any other suggestions on how you might hedge the market?
I don't think it's necessary to hedge the overall market because right now in the stock, this is very important. You need to pay attention to this. Right now in the stock market, we have a massive amount of dispersion. Okay? Basically, you can have dispersion or you can have correlation. Correlation is when stocks move together like a marching band, they all go up and down together. Dispersion is when they're all going different directions. What we have now is dispersion. It's a stock picker's market. It's a great environment to pick stocks. So what that means is that when you have this level of dispersion, you know, trading the overall level of the index becomes less important and becomes more important to pick stocks. So What I like to think about, you know, it's funny because in the Daily Dirt Nap, before I went on vacation, I hedged the portfolio and I bought puts in the S&P 500. Not a lot, just a few. And it was a completely useless hedge. And, you know, I was right in trying to hedge because the inflation trade got hit. But it virtually had no impact on the index. It was the wrong hedge. So instead of trying to hedge the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ or the Dow Jones, think about how to hedge your specific portfolio.
Can you give, there's a few people asking this, can you give kind of a summary of the difference between what we do in Street Freak here at Malden Economics and what you do in the Daily Dirt Nap?
Street Freak is for active traders, for sure. It's for people who are trying to make money in the stock market. The Daily Dirt Nap is also, it's all about making money. But we really examine a lot of the sentiment and psychology and the philosophical issues in the market. It's really for people who like thinking about markets, whereas Street Freak, we do a little bit of that, but it's mostly active trading.
Yeah, I think, I think it would be fair to say that the audience for the Daily Dirt Nap is primarily market participants. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's definitely the way it started out. When I started in 2008, it was 100% institutional, and it's become less institutional over time, but pretty much, I would say 90% of subscribers to the Daily Dirt Nap work in the financial industry in some capacity.
I will say that reading the Daily Dirt Nap, I've learned more personally from reading the Daily Dirt Nap for now 5 years than any other publication. Learn more about the markets in general and how to think about the markets and how to think about strategy, for what it's worth.
Yeah.
Let me find one last question here. And then I promise I'll let you go. Thank you for, I know it's hard to get pounded with smart questions in a half an hour, so I do appreciate it. Let's end with this. What asset or sector are you most bullish on over the next 1 to 2 years?
Probably energy, actually. Yeah. The ESG people will say that, California, 2035, you can't sell internal combustion engines in California. So people think that in 12 or 13 years, we're going to all be driving electric cars and we won't need oil. The problem is that we haven't made the necessary investments in energy infrastructure. We have a huge problem with supply, just at a point that the economy is running very hot. And yeah, I mean, 50 years from now, the price of oil might be zero. I think we're going to get one or two, maybe one, big bull markets between now and then. And I think we're in the middle of that right now.
Great spot to end it. Jared Dillian, thank you so much. And for everyone watching, thank you for your support of Jared Street Freak and of Malden Economics. Feel free to send in additional questions. There are a few that we didn't get to. I'll make sure that we save those and we'll try to tack them into the next edition of Street Freak at the end, just as a little Q&A bonus section for you. So again, thanks for watching. I'm Ed D'Agostino with Jared Dillian. We'll see you soon.